everybody out there in wrestling land. Welcome to another edition of Ring Respect Radio right here on the Video Bros Network. My name is Bobby Munson, and I'm joined, as always, by the man with the angelic voice. He is Papa Smokes. Papa Smokes, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great tonight, Munson. And how are all my wrestling people doing up there?
We hope that, once again, everybody out there is staying safe, staying healthy, and COVID-free as much as possible. Keep up your social distancing, and hopefully we'll get back to some sort of normal at this point. Maybe 2022. Who knows, Papa Smokes? It's looking pretty rough, but hopefully everyone's staying safe. But in the meantime, hey, Papa Smokes and I are happy to entertain you with more editions of Ring Respect Radio right here on the Video Bros Network. And why don't you go ahead and help us out a little bit. Go ahead, click that like button down below. There's a subscribe button down there as well, too. Subscribe to the channel and turn on the notifications bell so you can know anytime we release brand new episodes of Ring Respect Radio right here on the Video Bros Network. If you also like what we do, you should go over and check out our friends at Backbreaker Media. Backbreaker Media, where you can also find recap episodes of Ring Respect Radio on their YouTube channel and also available on Podbean as well. Give them a like, a subscribe, and give a shout out to the boys over at Backbreaker Media for all they do. Today on the show, Papa Smokes got a couple of big topics to go over. The one topic we're going to go through will be the MLW Opera Cup Round 1 review from two different episodes of MLW Fusion. So we're going to review both episodes of those shows. But then we're going to start off with a tribute to a man. Seems like, Papa Smokes, this year we've been doing this quite often, going over the careers of certain wrestlers when they pass away. But the wrestling world lost Pat Patterson on December 2nd of this year. Very sad moment for the wrestling business in general. Great guy. And unfortunate that we have to go over his career once he's gone and no longer with us.
Yeah, that's the way she goes, though, I guess. Hey, and it's a way to talk about some of the famous stars from the past. And a guy like Pat Patterson left an indelible imprint on the wrestling biz. And we'll get into his whole career.
Yeah, so it turns out 79 years old, passed away from liver failure, a blood clot that took his life away from him. And, you know, just a wonderful guy. Papa Smokes, did you see any of the tributes, like the video package WWE put together, or else the one that Gerald Briscoe did talking about his friendship with Pat Patterson?
Yeah, I saw the video package that WWE put out. Very nice, very well done, very respectful for an employee that worked for that company for, God, the better part of 30 years, probably, right?
Yeah, I believe if I got that in my notes, he actually started working for them technically in 1979, and right up until 2020, he was on and off working in some sort of backstage role or in-ring role of some sorts that he's been doing for a long time for that company. He's just, you know, I mean, he's been family to the WWF or WWE for pretty much a good majority of his life.
Yeah, yeah. He was Vince's right-hand man, right up there helping him with all the main decisions in creative booking, agenting, and of course, as we'll get into, Pat Patterson, a huge star in the ring in his day as well. And he learned from some of the best bookers and promoters from the past.
Certainly so. And I mean, a Canadian-born wrestler as well. So wonderful that somebody of this caliber came right from our home country here in Canada. Once again, wonderful guy. And let's get down to it, Papa Smokes. Let's get into the career of Pat Patterson, starting back to his early days as a wrestler.
Yeah, yeah. Patterson is from Montreal. He debuted as a wrestler there in 1988. We've talked in the show before about what a mecca of wrestling that Montreal has been over the years. A huge and consistently large attended live shows. We know some of the stars from the past. If you've been reading the Andre the Giant book, as we're going to review in some future episode, it gives a pretty good byline of the tremendous territory that Montreal was, and how many wrestlers really wanted to work. As a debuting star back then was probably a pretty big deal.
Yeah, certainly. And yes, you're right. I have been reading that, and I am actually through that part already. And I'm glad you brought that up. It's going to be wonderful when we get to the point of doing the review of that particular book. And there is a lot of rich history in Montreal and in Quebec in general that maybe doesn't get heard about a lot through the mentions of Canadian wrestling. There's always been a lot of focus, definitely, you know, out towards the Calgary area and stuff like that. I mean, obviously infamous for the stars it's pumped out, but a lot of rich history there in Quebec that we'll have an opportunity to talk even deeper about when we get to that review of the Andre the Giant book. But yeah, no, Patterson spent his time wrestling in Canada in 1958, but then moved to the United States by 1962, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he went to Boston and was for a famous Santos. Also a big deal. Lots of people wanted to work for Santos back then, so you knew that he was a promising talent when Pat came down there. He worked for Santos for a little bit and in 62 and then moved to Pacific Northwest Wrestling for Don Bolton, which is out of Portland, Oregon. Bob, you and I have talked about this before. What a another strong territory that was. Pacific Northwest Wrestling always had extremely good angles, booking feuds. Lots of stars passed through there on their way up to the top, including Roddy Piper and the Sheepherders and the countless guys. This is where Patterson received his first gimmick to use, which was a gay gimmick. He was Pretty Boy Patterson, which was you know, playing off of his private life, in which he was out as a gay guy. Even back then, that would have been a more difficult thing at that time, but yeah, he turned it and used it creatively into his character that he had. So Pretty Boy Patterson was the first character that Pat Patterson got into, and held singles and tag team gold in Pacific Northwest Wrestling. I think that's one of the places he really learned his chops in the wrestling biz.
Well, and you said about winning tag team gold, he would then go on to become a two-time NWA World Tag Team Champion with partner Ray Stevens when he hit up big-time wrestling in San Francisco.
That's right. One of the most famous and most lauded and decorated tag teams of all time. I don't think that many current fans know the work of Ray Stevens, but it's absolutely excellent. All the old-time workers point to Stevens as one of the best workers in the game. Now, when I say worker, I don't mean necessarily technical wrestler or having huge spots or anything, but this was a guy that understood psychology, understood bumping and selling, understood how to get the crowd into promos and ring work, and Patterson learned a whole ton from Stevens, emulated him, listened to him, obviously, and their tag team, the Blonde Bombers, was the hottest thing going in wrestling down in San Francisco. They were working for Roy Shire, who was a hugely famous and influential promoter, too. So this is also where I think Patterson learned a whole hell of a lot about wrestling, the business, the in-ring stuff, but the behind-scenes stuff too, including booking angles and setting up matches and that kind of thing. But that's an extremely good source to learn from.
Definitely. So, and from there, we start to get into, you know, a company you've talked a lot about. You know, he spent, first of all, Championship Wrestling from Florida, spent a year there. But then it was this one piqued interest because of how much we've talked about them, or you brought them up quite a bit, is AWA Wrestling, where he spent time from about 78 to 83.
Yeah, that's my old favorite, of course, the American Wrestling Association, but... You just mentioned two promotions, the Championship Wrestling in Florida. That's with promoter Eddie Graham, and with the AWA, it's earned. Here's two more guys that are absolute classics in the business, guys that ran vastly successful companies for a long time, guys that lived there. Eddie Graham, we've talked about him, but he'll always be remembered for... being such a great creative guy, such a great finish man, he was the guy that taught Dusty Rhodes and a number of other people how to book pro wrestling throughout the years. And then same thing for Vern Gagne, a different style, but you know that Pat Patterson had his ears open listening to Eddie Graham and Vern Gagne. He just couldn't ask for two better teachers, and these would be more years where he really, really just soaked in the culture of the pro wrestling world and business, and learned how to take care of the office behind the scenes when the cameras aren't on, to work with the talent, work with other creative and the promoter, just to put out the best product you possibly can.
It wasn't just North America that Pat Patterson would remain in. He actually did a year over in Japan in 1979, working with New Japan Pro Wrestling as well, too.
Yeah, he worked with another genius of the business over there, too, Antonio Inoki, who was a championship wrestler, promoter, booker, creative force in the game as well, and he would have just been learning everything he could from Inoki there, too, and it was from his time in Japan, I think, that he went to WWF at that time in 1979 and did some good business there, too. He was a heel at WWF at this time. He faced a champion, Bob Back, a number of times. He had big matches in Madison Square Garden. He had tag team runs. He had all kinds of good matches and angles going on in WWF at this time, of course, culminating with the winning the brand new Intercontinental title in a tournament in Rio. Now, did you read about this month?
Oh, I've heard all about the Rio tournament of sorts and how this one was all basically it was all in kayfabe, I guess, at the time. This was a tournament that never happened, but they sold it like this thing happened.
Yeah, now I wonder why they didn't make a series of matches or a tournament on TV or at house shows or something to award. But apparently they didn't, so they didn't. Yeah, it was for kind of giggling about that. Won it in a tournament in Rio de Janeiro. That is pretty funny.
Yeah, and even prior to winning that Intercontinental title tournament, he actually also had won another championship that maybe some of our listeners aren't familiar with, and that was the WWF North American Championship, where he defeated Ted DiBiase for that title back in the day. So we've seen the resurrection of the North American Championship in NXT, so it is around now. But they never talk about the deep history of that championship being originally in the WWF and being held by guys like Ted DiBiase and Pat Patterson.
Yeah. To be honest, I don't know a whole lot about that belt either. I don't think they had it for all that long back at that time. They might have decided to go with the Intercontinental title instead of that. But Patterson, no stranger to holding gold everywhere he went. And then I was going to note also that 1981, he becomes a babyface and feuds with Sergeant Slaughter. And that feud culminated in a match of the year, Sergeant Slaughter versus Pat Patterson in the match. That was a very, very famous match in 81, again, before internet and WWE networks and stuff like that. This match was highly desired by tape traders and hardcore wrestling fans around the world. Everybody wanted to get their hands on this match. Very excellent, very violent, bloody. You know, like I say, the culmination of a long feud, and this match was big. I think Meltzer gave it match of the year at that time, even though it wasn't in the Tokyo Dome. And this was one of the huge matches, probably Patterson's hugest match in his career that people still want to watch.
And right at the end of his in-ring career, what too? So all that time and is one of his greatest and well-known matches comes right towards the end of that career. So what a great way to send off a in-ring career like this with a match of the year and a run with the Intercontinental Championship first in the WWF. I mean, this guy really had a sending off that most wrestlers would dream about.
Yeah, and Pat was in his 40s by that time, in his early 40s by the time of that handicap match, and that feud with Sergeant Slaughter. So, yeah, again, working smart, not doing moves that are going to shorten his career, not taking the massive spots and massive bumps all the time, using his psychology, being a smart wrestler, and not destroying his body. You can have a long career if you do that, but not too many people do it nowadays.
And from what I understand, too, like watching through some of these video packages and listening to Gerald Briscoe, is that Pat Patterson, once he got out of the ring and transitioned to his backstage roles, he became like a family member to just about everybody. And then we're not talking just the stars or, you know, Vince McMahon. We're talking like sound technicians and, you know, people working the truck and stuff like that. The people that maybe get forgotten about behind the scenes. And everybody would say how Pat Patterson was like a brother to every single one of them. He was always happy to see everybody. He was just, he brought good feelings to every backstage arena that he was in.
Yeah, I've heard that about Pat quite a lot myself. He was a very nice guy, very friendly, would talk to anyone, and was just a good guy, too. I wanted to bring up some of Pat's moments on commentary. Vince trusted him enough to put him on commentary, despite his fairly strong French-Canadian accent, but he has some big moments on commentary, too. He was doing color during the 1983 match when Jimmy Snuka jumped off the cage onto Magnificent Morocco. That was a huge, huge moment in wrestling history. No one had ever attempted such a move, jumping off the top of a cage. Now they do it in the preliminary matches and the ladies' matches and the midget matches. It's not a big deal anymore, but this was the first time. So Patterson was on commentary for that. He was on commentary when Iron Sheik defeated Bob Backlund for the WWF title. He was on commentary for Hogan defeating Iron Sheik for the WWF title. This is all in 84. And he was the referee for the main event in WrestleMania 1. You remember this story, Munson? They were going to have Muhammad Ali as special referee. And as they were kind of getting things ready and rehearsing a bit, it was pretty obvious that Ali wasn't going to be able to do the in-ring refereeing. As we know, that's a difficult job at the best of times. So what they did was put Ali as the outside of ring official and needed someone experienced that could handle the job as the in-ring ref. And so Patterson did that as well. They needed everything perfect for that main event. If WrestleMania 1 hadn't have gone off, that Vince's company might have gone under. So he needed all that stuff to be perfect that night. And look what happened. It was, and the rest is history.
That's true, yeah. And now still, no matter what, always looked upon as the biggest show of the wrestling year, even if it is a pile of heaping garbage just about every time nowadays. But, yeah. I mean, you know, that's no fault to what Pat Patterson did to, you know, pave the way and stuff like that. It just, wrestling's changed over the years, and that's the way it is, I guess. But, you know, I wanted to talk about this for a moment. I'm not sure if you ever got to see this, but there was a roundtable discussion that was featured on the WWE Network quite a few years ago. I remember this panel involving both Bret Hart and Pat Patterson as well, too, and they were discussing Canadian wrestling at the time. And it was put onto the table and asked of the two of them who they thought the greatest worker in Canadian wrestling history was. Pat Patterson himself actually said, I'm looking at him right now, Bret Hart. And Bret Hart says, you're crazy. It's Archie the Stomper Goldie. And I think I've told you this story, because that's when I kind of became aware of Archie the Stomper Goldie and had to go and start looking into him, because why the hell does Hitman think this guy's the greatest? You know, I mean, obviously I've always thought Hitman is the greatest Canadian wrestler. So I had to go and find out more about it. But I remember that moment, and Pat Patterson and Bret Hart having this kind of like back and forth with each other, taking knocks at one of each other for not thinking that Archie Goldie was the best. Got to think, because Pat didn't agree at all. He didn't think Archie was quite the drawing power that Bret made him out to be.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Archie never made it to a major Fed either, really. Or did I say never made it? He never decided to compete for one. But Bret Hart and the Harts would know about the Stomper Goldie. He worked for them for a long time and many, many runs. And Yeah, in many ways, he's a very consummate wrestler. I think the guys liked him a whole bunch in the locker room, but this was a guy that was a fitness fanatic. I mean, his body looked like it was carved out of iron or something. The guy worked out all the time, weights and cardio. He had that look, like he looked like the Grinch or something. Like he looks like some kind of almost a monster more than a human being. He's just so scary and ugly looking. And the fans were terrified of him. And I think maybe that's part of what Brett was getting at there, that he just, Goldie had that effect on audiences, that he was truly an intimidating and terrifying looking guy and a good promo and a good solid ring worker too. So got to respect Brett's opinion too. He worked with him a million times, so a nice pick by Brett.
Well, and I think Brett was getting at the fact too that Archie Goldie often drew quite a large house for his dad with Stampede Wrestling and stuff like that. So he was basing it on the amount of audience he was able to get within the territory he worked and stuff. And, you know, despite the fact that he didn't go take it any further than that, he still was a large draw within where he came from. So that's why Brett respects him as the greatest of all time. But I also got to agree with Pat Patterson. You got to send the respect the other way, that, you know, obviously the Hitman with the draw, the times and everything that he's done in wrestling, I mean, really, in many ways, is probably the best Canadian wrestler or one of the best Canadian wrestlers of all time, for sure.
Yeah, Brett's on everybody's short list. There are other contenders, both from the older ages and from the newer times. And I hear people saying Edge is the best Canadian of all time. I kind of have to shake my head at that a little bit when there's Gene Kaniski and a few other guys that have stomped their way across Canada, but it's all up in the air. That certainly Brett is on everybody's short list as greatest Canadian ever. Memorable WWE title runs and all of it. He worked his way to the top and got everybody's respect in the meantime.
Well, exactly. And I mean, you bring up people mentioning Edge, and I'm noticing a lot too. A lot of the people that, you know, are starting. I'm not starting into wrestling now, but, you know, when they were younger, it was the Attitude Era or even past that into the Ruthless Aggression Era. And so they grew up on what they grew up on. And so they're probably listening to this podcast now, and we're talking about Pat Patterson, the wrestler and the announcer and stuff like that. To, you know, I mean, they probably know Pat Patterson, the stooge that was out there, you know, doing these, what were they, ladies nightgown matches with Gerald Briscoe and stuff like that and everything. And I mean, still giving, you know, A-plus efforts for everything that Vince McMahon wanted him out there doing for the company all these years.
Yeah. A lot of fans nowadays know him as that, or they know him because you can pick him in the video game kind of thing too. But I will always like Patterson the best as a wrestler. In his old days, he never really looked that great or anything like that. Just like his partner Ray Stevens, they weren't beautiful people to look at or impressive or anything, but they knew the game so well with the psychology and ring work. And he'll just Pat'll never be forgotten as a wrestler or a backstage agent booker type role, and just so crucial in the development of current WWE and the way it presents its product.
Definitely. So anything else that you want to add there about the career of Pat Patterson before we move on here today, Pop Smokes?
No, it seems like we've covered most of it. I'm sorry to see some of these guys go. I'm sorry to see them all go, but this Pat Patterson was kind of like, in my mind, at least an anchor to the past that remained in WWE. Like he was the creative guy that wanted to, that made matches and angles most like they did in the territory days in the traditional manner. Patterson liked comedy quite a bit, and he had some silly, funny stuff on there too, but he still used the psychology and the lessons of some of the great promoters and bookers that taught him over the years, such as Roy Scheider and Eddie Graham and Vern Gagne. And he took all that learning, and just, that's what was so valuable to Vince. That's why Vince you know, what he does with all his top guys, he overpays them so that they never have a reason to leave, kind of thing. And that was it with Pat. I think Vince and Pat were friends as well, and in a very profitable partnership.
Well, you know what? All the respect to Pat Patterson and the career that he's left behind. Definitely, you know, a memorable person in the wrestling industry, and I'm very glad that we got to speak about him here today. But speaking of memorable wrestling history, Papa Smokes, we've been talking about it. The Opera Cup, MLW Fusion, was going to be hosting the 2020 Opera Cup after the success of the 2019 Opera Cup. A rich history with this particular tournament. This dates back quite a few years and went on for a long time working in the old opera houses, as you've mentioned on previous episodes of the show here, Papa Smokes. So it's back once again. Last year's winner, Davey Boy Smith Jr., going to be featured in the tournament. But we're going to kick things off with the first episode that hosted any of these Opera Cup matches. We're talking MLW Fusion episode number 111. And they kicked this one off right away with an opening package recapping the brackets to the Opera Cup itself. So getting us ready for the matches and telling us that we're going to be seeing open round matches tonight of Richard Holiday versus TJP and also Filthy Tom Lawler versus Rocky Romero, who's coming into MLW from New Japan Pro Wrestling. So New Japan Pro Wrestling sending Rocky Romero to represent them in this year's Opera Cup. So why don't you kickstart us off into the MLW Fusion episode 111 here, Papa Smokes.
Okay, sounds good. We started off with a promo with Richard Holiday, who, like we said last time, I like this guy. He looks good. He's a good character. He's quite well spoken and all that. I just don't think he's had his big moment or his big match yet. And in the previous episode of this podcast, we were looking forward to this to see how he was going to do and see if he ever had his big moment. And so he's got the opening match in the Opera Cup versus TJP. Holiday had a little promo before the match. He ran into former Dynasty member Gino Medina. They had a little trash-talking session with each other, so you can kind of see that there might be a program involving those two once maybe the cup is over. But then we had this match, Richard Holiday versus TJP, and this was pretty good stuff. What did you think of this match, Bunsen?
I really enjoyed this one. This was a good way to kick off the show. It ran a decent amount, like a good amount of time for a tournament style matchup, especially to, you know, a matchup that kicks off a program. TJP, I got familiar with him over in WWE, especially with the Cruiserweight Classic and being featured eventually on their show as the Cruiserweight Champion for a while. Was expecting maybe a lot more high flying out of him, but this was not the same TJP I thought I knew, kind of thing. He came in with a lot more technical ability, giving us a lot more technical match between him and Richard Holiday. It was quite enjoyable. I really liked this.
Yeah, I think that might be the difference between watching some of these guys' matches in WWE and then watching them when they come to a different promotion. Like we've talked about before, both of us like Major League Wrestling because it has a more sports-based presentation, and there's not a whole lot of large aerial spots strung together like you might see on some other wrestling shows. That's to some people's tastes as well, but in MLW the matches are laid out to look like more of a World of Sport kind of presentation. It looks like a struggle or an actual fight between two guys. So that's what this was too. TJP wasn't going to be flipping around off the ropes too much. He was using some technical expertise. The same with Holiday. I got a good look at his wrestling skill in this. And not a bad match at all, actually. I'm impressed with Holiday's.
Yeah,
and, Richard Holiday got the clean pin in this match with his kind of muscle buster type finish called the Market Crash. And very impressive. Richard Holiday moves on to round two.
I got to say, not only after this match, but after watching the promo and the, you know, even these big nets that they've been playing with Richard Holiday, I'm really coming around. I'm really starting to be sold on Richard Holiday as somebody that they could elevate to a higher up position on the card. I think this guy, he has that ability. I think he's got that. he's got that smirky attitude of MJF, but it's not quite the same. But you know, you can tell that there that work has been together with the two of them. But he's a larger guy, and he's got a little bit more technical prowess in that ring. I think that there might be even more potential in this guy than what they've seen yet.
Yeah, I gotta totally agree with that too. And yeah, like I say, Holiday has a good look. He's 6'3", 240 pounds. He obviously works out a whole hell of a lot. He's funny. He's well-spoken. His promo skill is good. I think if he continues upward motion, I could see this guy as being MLW heavyweight champion, having run as champ at some point. I don't think it's out of the question for the future for this guy.
Not at all. And I think as long as this keeps going, you and I will keep drinking that rarefied air. So anyway, this episode of MLW being held on Thanksgiving. So we actually got a little bit of a Thanksgiving wish, which doesn't hold the same effect here in Canada. But for the U.S. Folks, it was a happy Thanksgiving wish sent in from the Von Erich family.
Yeah. Yeah, nice to see them out in Hawaii. They look like they live a nice life out there. And we also had a package from Myron Reed challenging Leo Rush, where we discovered that Leo Rush was apparently coming back to MLW after his little tenure at NXT there. And Rush had a video to respond to this, too. So it looks like we're going to get this feud that they teased a little bit, Myron Reed versus Leo Rush. Interested to watch that one, too.
And it doesn't seem like they're necessarily giving it away, because they did show on the screen that Leo Rush arrives for December 23rd at King of Coliseum. Now, it says debuts, or he comes in at that time. It didn't say we're getting the match with Myron Reed that night necessarily.
Yeah, we don't know yet, but the groundwork is being laid at the very least.
Exactly. But it will be interesting to watch the King of Coliseum there. December 23rd, I'm definitely looking forward to it. Another one that we'll be able to take a deep look at after that one takes place too, Papa Smokes.
For sure. Moving on here too, we had a package of Rich Bikini and St. Laurent doing some commentary work in the background, interrupted then by Selena De La Renta, who is just furthering her sort of plot line. She's feuding against Conan in the background of MLW offices, kind of about control of the company, and Conan had gotten her manager's license revoked, and she's on the warpath too, and I wouldn't take that lightly either. She's gonna get her revenge at some point. I'll be interested to see as well.
Oh, and they keep playing around with this. And I mean, gotta say, Selena De La Renta does a wonderful job. I mean, you sit there and listen to her talk, and this is not something I feel like skipping. I feel like it ties into the show well enough. She does what she's supposed to do. She's believable in what she's supposed to do, and she really makes you interested in this particular storyline she has going for her.
Yeah, isn't she great? And also very young too, and working in a production and are behind the scenes too, producing whole episodes of Fusion at her young age. So she's got a bright, bright future ahead of her.
Oh, does she ever? And yeah, I mean, keep watching out for her. Anybody who hasn't seen her work yet, I mean, she's got star quality written all over her.
That's for sure. But speaking of star quality now, the next match they had here, what did you think of Calvin Tank?
I was, you know, I mean, this was great, because, I mean, this is how you debut a big guy like this. You have him go in there against the guy the size of Robert Martyr that he had going up against him, and you have Tankman come in and look like a top guy. And, man, is this guy fucking agile for a 350-pound beast?
I'll say, we start running the ropes, and he does that leapfrog.
Yeah, and then
everybody can. I think everybody popped it up.
Well, and then wasn't it into that leapfrog and into like a spinning roundhouse kick or something right afterwards there? Like, man, this guy, man, he can move.
Yeah. Yeah, it's looking good for Calvin Tankman. He's got to have his first match on here. They made him look huge. They made him look strong. I had to giggle at his opponent's name, the guy named Robert Martyr. He certainly got martyred in that match, but... I just like a little pun here and there, but no, a very impressive debut for Calvin Tankman. Looking for big things in the future for this guy now. I wonder who they could match him up with in MLW.
Well, I mean, depending on how things go, I mean, you got guys like Jacob Fatu that fit the profile perfectly for a fight with Calvin Tankman. Although, the way it seems right now, are we looking at a heel character or a babyface character with Tankman? It was kind of, it's hard to tell for sure which way he lies just yet.
Yeah, perhaps they're not sure how they're going to use him yet, but
at the same time,
good to have, good to have a look at him for now.
For sure, good to have a look at, and I mean, even so, if he becomes the one of the next big heels there too, I mean, you got boys like Alexander Hammerstone that could mix it up pretty well with a guy that size.
Absolutely, so that's looking good for the future. And speaking of Hammerstone, he was in a short interview on the line about his injuries incurred at the hands of the Black Hand of Contra that we saw in the Restart Episode 1. He has some neck and back injuries from taking that choke slam onto the apron, but he said he's not going to be kept down. He's coming after Contra. Joseph Samael from Contra replied to that. He doesn't seem worried about Hammerstone. We're going to have a huge clash between Hammerstone and the Dynasty against Contra, I think, here. And that's looking to be a massive feud. Contra, extremely hard to take down, especially when they use their strength in numbers.
Oh, certainly. And yeah, just to go over this a little bit more, I believe that the MLW guys did a recap as well, too. Also mentioned that the exact injuries that were given to Hammerstone were a rib contusion, hyperflexion of the neck, and transverse myelitis. If I'm saying that correctly, anyway, I'm no doctor, so don't take my word on that. But yeah, that's what they said that he had as well. And I mean, I just want to say, how awesome is it is that somebody followed up with something like this in wrestling in 2020? Normally, there's people, like, I'm not even going to say it, we're recording this after the War Games happen, and we're watching people that, you know, are definitely too small to be going into a cage match in the first damn place, going in there and taking bumps and hits with sledgehammers and stuff like that, and popping up 30 seconds later. Here's a guy the size of Alexander Hammerstone who gets his ass handed to him, and they're keeping him off television the next week other than a phone conversation to give an update on his injuries, selling the injuries that he was given on the wrestling program. Why is this such a hard concept for people in wrestling these days?
Yeah, I don't know, especially when you see it on a program like this, and it resonates with me and the fans, I think, in general, that it gives it that look of realism, too. And, I mean, for all we know, it could be real, right? He took a pretty hard bump on that apron, but, I mean, in this way, we don't actually know. It's a little different than saying the superstar has been carted off to the medical facilities, or what do they call it in WWE? They have a they never call it a hospital. They always call it
it's medical facility. I think you hit the hammer nail on the head right there. So
yeah. I don't know. This just this makes it sound good, and it's classic promoter and booker work right here. If you're next episode of TV isn't going to feature someone, you can make a reason for that. You don't just have to leave them off so that the fans are thinking, oh, my favorite guy doesn't have a match this week. No, it's already written into the plot of the angles that are going on, and this just gives it a dose of realism that makes the show so watchable and so excellent.
Definitely so, man. I really was glad they did this piece, and you know, it keeps Hammerstone in the minds of the fans and everything that's going on with him. So, I mean, excellent work on MLW's part here.
Yeah, I like it a lot. So how about now we're going to get to this main event of this episode, right? I don't think there was anything else before this. Filthy Tom Lawler versus Rocky Romero. As you mentioned, Romero on loan from New Japan Pro Wrestling, and that's again they have another star, the Laredo Kid, that's on loan from AAA Lucha in Mexico City. Now they got a guy from New Japan. This really charms me a lot, this international element that MLW has. that they borrow and trade from other promotions. They use guys from different countries around the world and stuff. It just gives it a flavor that for me is really important in the presentation of the program. I love this.
Well, and how much more it also elevates their own stars and stuff like that. You got a guy at the level of Filthy Tom Lawlor. Maybe many of our listeners aren't familiar with him, but I mean, this guy, a former MLW heavyweight champion, former MMA fighter as well, too. I mean, this guy is star quality and he carries himself that way. And to have him go in there against a guy like Rocky Romero from New Japan Pro Wrestling, which is maybe somebody our fans are, you know, people listening to the show are a little bit more familiar with. I mean, this really helps elevate Filthy Tom Lawlor in so many ways, or anybody that could work with an international star of this level.
Yeah, yeah. And Romero's fairly well known. He's been a wrestler for 20 years or more, operating at a pretty decent level over there in Japan. And I think he's done some stuff in Mexico too in the past, and that's exactly what you use a guy like this for. When he's on loan, he can come in from a different promotion and wrestle a match against one of the stars that MLW is trying to put over, and perhaps he will put over that wrestler, perhaps he won't, but this is the perfect way to use Rocky Romero in the promotion of Filthy Tom Lawlor. And I'm starting to like Lawlor more and more. I've watched him. I've only seen him on MLW. I've watched him for the past couple of years, but like you say, a star MMA fighter, fought in the UFC. So you expect him to maybe have that kind of hybrid style, which he does. But Lawlor has, even since I've been watching him, has become a better and better pro wrestler. Like at that style, he's really, really good, including his ring work and his, he lets his wacky personality kind of come through on the microphone. And this guy's a natural. I think he's really, really good. I think among all the great shoot fighters we've had that have made the transition to pro wrestling, I'd say Lawlor has to be one of the more successful ones, and really becoming a big favorite of mine on MLW.
Yeah, me too. I really enjoyed this match. What a great matchup between himself and Rocky Romero, and you know, Filthy Tom Lawlor picking up the win, going further in this tournament. You know, piques my interest even more. And this guy has it, and he's going places with it too.
You're totally right about that. And I have to ask you, Munson, what did you think of Lawler's trunks in this match? Those cut off Daisy Duke jean shorts.
I mean, this could honestly be one of the worst looking things, because in some wrestling companies, they would make this a joke. It would be laughable. It would become stupid. But there's something about Tom Lawlor's personality mixed with the presentation of MLW and still taking the in-ring work as serious as he does, and being the fact that this guy is a legitimate fighting badass at the same time. I mean, you blend all that together, and this is where you can make something silly like that acceptably okay.
Yeah, yeah. And like you said, they never brought it up, really. It was just, that's just Tom. That's the kind of guy he is. Like I say, he's got kind of a wacky and fun-loving personality. He likes to just flex his weirdness kind of on TV, and it works like that without making that an obvious part of his gimmick or presentation. I just like that they throw things like that in. But cheers to him for wearing Daisy Dukes in a important match on TV. That's quite hilarious.
Yeah, so that means Tom Lawlor moving on. That means that he will then fight the winner of the match coming up between ACH and Laredo Kid, which we'll get into here soon. And it means that Richard Holiday will end up taking on the winner of Low Ki and Davey Boy Smith Jr., which we'll also get into here soon. So that wraps up that episode of MLW Fusion, which then brings us into the most recent one that took place just prior to us recording here tonight. MLW Fusion episode number 112. So let's kick it right off. Let's get into this one, Pop Smokes.
Okay, sounds good to me. They did a couple promo packages about the main event of this show coming up tonight, and also stated that they'll introduce the Black Hand of Contra, this character that we saw in the first episode. So right on to the first match. We got another first round match here, and that is Laredo Kid versus ACH. We've both been looking forward to this one. I've only seen limited action from either of these guys, but you can easily see what their styles are. Laredo Kid, a luchador, a high flyer, an aerial artist. ACH, good grappler, very strong, good striking style, and as they said, hasn't been wrestling for most of the year, so you knew this guy was going to be excited to get back into the business and get back into having a match, and he's got the Laredo Kid in the Opera Cup tonight.
Yeah, and I know when we were talking about this match, when we found out about the brackets and everything, I didn't know anything about the Laredo Kid. I know you mentioned about his work there, and so I was definitely looking forward to seeing this. I'm very familiar with ACH, saw a lot of his work over at Ring of Honor, so I was excited to see him back because I know there's a lot of potential there. And then Laredo Kid, now after you hyped it up, I was like, okay, you know, I gotta watch this one. I'm pretty excited, and damn it, Papa Smokes, what a great matchup this turned out to be.
Yeah, it sure did. I was impressed by all elements of this match. Again, they got a good 12-13 minutes to do their thing in this match, which I think is plenty of time on a TV match. So we saw ACH get some quite close falls midway through this match until the end of this, when the Laredo Kid got on the top rope. ACH gave him a kick in the head, a brain buster, and then got the pinfall. So in this match, we see ACH advance. And yeah, that was quite a good match for free on TV. What did you think of this one?
Oh, I loved it, Papa Smokes. I thought it was great. It was exactly what I expected from ACH. And I'm sold on the Laredo Kid after you mentioned about his work, and I watched him here. I want to see more from Laredo Kid. I know it won't be in the Opera Cup, obviously, but I'm interested in going and looking at some of this guy's matches and investing more of my time into following a bit more of what he does, because there is a lot to enjoy about his work in the ring. He gave a good, solid 14-minute match here with ACH. And then ACH, after winning, how about that promo after? I mean, you couldn't talk about a more passionate promo about what he's ready to do in this tournament.
Yeah, and this just looks like a guy that hasn't been active. I know he took some time off the previous year, and then we all had some time off for COVID, or still do. So, this is a guy that's chomping at the bit to get back into the business that he loves. He just had his first match, and you could just feel the emotion coming from this guy. Really great promo.
Oh, for sure. Loved it. Loved everything about it. Great. So now that means we're going to see Tom Lawler versus ACH in the next round. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a little bit. So let's move on from there.
Yeah. We had a promo, Lawler announcing his new members of Team Filthy. He's got a little faction that they're growing there, and he's got a new tag team, Violence is Forever. And these are his whole Team Filthy are basically shoot-style fighters. He's got Dominic Greeny, the jiu-jitsu expert, and himself, and a few other guys in there. And now we got another faction that's starting to gain some steam, maybe some competition for Contra, or maybe they'll go after the Von Erichs. We don't know yet, but watching Team Filthy closely. And then we go to the next match, and they introduced the Black Hand of Contra as being Mads Kruger, and he took on Ariel Dominguez, who is obviously a preliminary talent. What did you think of Mads Kruger?
Man, this guy's a monster of a human being, if you can even call him a human being. This guy is big. He looks dangerous. Obviously, I don't know anything more about him. I didn't go look and see if this guy's had a long career prior to heading over to MLW, what he did before this or anything like that. I think I wanted to keep that mystique about it. It was a solid squash match to get our eyes on this new talent and everything like that, much like they did with Calvin Tankman last week. It was an opportunity to get a new face in there and say, hey, these are some of the guys you're going to be seeing moving forward here with MLW.
Yeah, and I think that's a good idea. A lot of people don't like squash matches so much, but I really think this is a way to put over your new talent, especially your guys that are big monsters such as Calvin Tankman and Mads Kruger. You don't need these guys looking weak on TV. You don't give them an opponent who is a name or another roster member, you know what I mean? Not to, you give them a preliminary talent, which will put up a little bit of a fight, but really it's just to showcase the size and skill and viciousness of your star that you're putting over. This was another example of that. Mads Kruger over Ariel Dominguez, very quick match. Some masked members of Contra came out and put Dominguez in a body bag afterwards and carried him out. Very intimidating, very scary for his future opponents. And I thought they made Mads Kruger look like an unstoppable giant, which is, I think, what they were trying to do.
Yeah, and I mean, I got feeling of like when they debut guys like, you know, big guys in wrestling and stuff like that, when you saw the debut of guys like Giant Gonzalez in the past, or more, I guess, more modernly Braun Strowman for some people, is they come in looking intimidating and stuff, but hopefully they can continue to do something with it. I mean, Mads Kruger cannot be exposed in any way. Like you say, this squash match with a smaller guy to put him over is exactly what you need to do to make him look great. I mean, you can't have him go in there with a, you know, a star like Davey Boy Smith Jr. or something right away and have Davey go over this guy, because I mean, you're not going to have a star like Davey put this guy over right away like that. I mean, it would just, it ruins everything. You got to have these guys going in there and showing their dominance over these other guys and stuff like that, so that there's fear struck into people moving forward from them.
Yeah. I agree 100%, and I also agree with MLW doing booking the traditional way, doing it the smart way, doing it the way that's proven that we know draws heat from the fans. And I already can't wait to see more from Mads Kruger, big giant of a man, and good God, who's going to take him down? But you know, Alexander Hammerstone is probably first in line to get a shot at Kruger, and there's a guy that might probably handle the job too. That this is going to be good stuff.
Yeah, and again, like that's what you got to do. You got to build up Mads Kruger so that it's even more meaningful if a guy like Hammerstone gets in there with him and is able to overcome the beast that is Mads Kruger. And it really only then elevates a guy the level of Alexander Hammerstone even further, while still not hurting a guy the level of Mads Kruger in the same time.
Yeah. Doing it right. This is going to be good. So I guess now Contra has Joseph Samael, Simon Gotch, Jacob Fatu, Ikiro Kwan, and now Mads Kruger. The five guys in that faction, and they're going to be tough. They're going to be running roughshod over MLW until somebody takes it to them. And this is going to be good. We'll get a lot of good matches out of it.
Oh, we will, certainly. So, moving on from there, they did a couple of video packages recapping the 2019 Opera Cup, especially focusing on leading up to the main event of the night, which is a round one match that occurred in the 2019 Opera Cup, Davey Boy Smith and Low Ki. That recapping last year when Davey Boy Smith Jr. managed to defeat Low Ki in that opening round and inevitably going on to win the cup. So nice video package there. And then from there, it was another promo from our boy Richard Holiday.
Yeah, Holiday. They're using him well. I think that it probably is his strength is on the mic. He's a, like you said, a smarmy college boy, rich boy kind of thing. You know, he's always got his dad slash lawyer, and that's funny. And he's just a smarmy prick, basically. And I think using him, he's got a dynastic coffee and his coffee mugs for sale. He's running around with the Caribbean Championship, which I don't think he even won. And he's a good comical heel character, and I can't wait to see what they do with him.
Looking forward to it. So, and from there, I believe, was there anything else I missed before we get to the main event here?
No, I don't think so. I think it's main event time.
All right, main event time. The last of the first round matches. We got Davey Boy Smith Jr. and Low Ki. So let's get us into this one, Pop Smokes.
Yeah. This we enjoyed this match last year, and then we got him again in the first round this year. This is great news. The guys started out sportsmanlike and all that with handshakes and gestures of respect. They started out with some martial arts style grappling. We all know Loki is a shooter type guy. He knows lots of real grappling, as well as Davey Boy Smith trains with fighters and wrestlers all over the world. So he's got all kinds of skill. This was a nice sporting grappling match for a long time. For the first 5-6 minutes of this match, we saw chain wrestling, catch-as-catch-can grappling, and then it didn't start to get nasty until mid-match, and then we started seeing some punches to the face, some low kicks, and other kinds of maneuvers that maybe ride the edge of the rule book a little bit, but this really picked up. It was a very nicely laid-out match with the scientific wrestling at the beginning and then getting into a more of a brawling scenario halfway through.
Yeah, man, this match just rocked. And like you said, it's that all that build and stuff like that that really makes a wrestling match that great. I mean, because you felt that passion. I mean, these two guys, they know each other well. They built it with that grappling, that back and forth and everything that really kind of led you into it. And then once that passion really starts to come through and they realize that's not enough, that's when, yeah, it starts to get dirty. And, you know, you got to throw in the big guns there and try to really knock the guy out in order to take a win. And, you know, this time around, it was Loki that ended up picking up that roll-up win, very similar to last year's ending, only this time with Loki picking up the finish.
Yeah. And this was a fairly long match, too. So you knew that the guys had a lot of stuff that they wanted to get done in this match. Loki had been riding on the larger Smith's back with a choke, and Smith rolled into it and tried to roll up Loki. He reversed it, and there was a pinfall, another nice clean win. Nobody having to have run-ins or foreign objects or anything like that. They're going to keep this Opera Cup fairly sporting style, I think, and I appreciate that. Why not have some matches where people get clean pinfalls and clear wins over each other? It's not really going to factor into future angles or anything. I think this will be a self-contained tournament. You either win it or you don't, so taking a loss in this isn't so bad for anybody, I don't think. But you notice Davey Boy Smith Jr. has lost his last few matches on MLW. Also a sign that he's his contract is up right away. And from the scuttlebutt I hear on the internet, he is not going to re-sign with MLW. So I suppose he's doing his job on the way out. But never any shame losing to a career shooter like Loki.
Not at all. But, I mean, I do fear when you start to talk about his contract coming to an end. I mean, what's next for him? There's not a lot out there in terms of things that he can do beyond MLW without going to one of the two big guys. And right now, I don't think there's anything really that they can offer Davey Boy Smith Jr. and his talent.
Yeah, I hear that WWE are interested in Smith Jr. and might sign him to NXT. I agree with you. I don't know what's there for him, but I think any wrestler in his position would want to see for themselves just because of, you know, you got to make the big league at least once and see what you can do, see if you can impress them. Has he been there before, though? Smith has been in WWE before, though, also, hasn't
he? You bet he was. Actually, he had a run as a former tag team champion with TJ Wilson there, with Natalya as their manager, as the kind of recreated Hart Foundation for a little while.
Right. Okay, that's pretty good. Yeah. Sounds like he's going to try it again, but I guess we'll see what happens in the future.
Yeah, well, I... honestly, if this is the truth that you're saying, especially if it goes to NXT, I mean, push this guy to the main event level when he gets there. Like, don't have him floundering in these cinematic bullshit things or anything over there. Like, this guy is a star with the ability to give you a quality match. This guy needs to be mixing up with your Adam Coles and any of the guys at the top of the NXT ladder over there, the Finn Balors and guys like that are at the top of the chain there.
Yeah, and it's getting to the point where on shows like NXT and AEW, where it's almost It almost seems like Smith would be too big for those rosters. You know what I mean? Like, there's no one else that's the size of a guy like that, 6'6", 250 pounds. Like, it'll be different. Their wrestlers aren't made like they used to be. They're not these naturally large, huge men and everything. But obviously Smith, with the good genetics, is. And we'll have to see what they do with him. NXT has a lot of under 200-pound guys, and you just kind of have to hope that they have a program with you that you can fit into and actually have some competitive matches with some guys.
Have him have a one-off with Walter over in NXT UK, and I'm down, put my money down on that one.
Oh, yeah, that's a good suggestion.
There we go. But unless you got anything more to add, Papa Smokes, I think that's going to bring Ring Respect to a wrap this week.
Okay, you know what? Good discussion. I'm just so excited that these programs are on, that we can watch some new material, some new stuff that we've been craving seeing. And isn't it a pleasure to see Opera Cup 2020 up and running?
Definitely so. And we're going to be looking forward to continuing our reviews as more episodes become available. So hopefully everybody's enjoying what you hear right here on Ring Respect Radio. And go check out MLW. Give them a like and subscribe over on YouTube as well, and follow them on social media. You can also follow myself and Papa Smokes on social media. Find us on Twitter. And also you can find the Video Bros on Instagram as well, too. So check us out. Like and subscribe to everything we do. And we appreciate everything you guys do, tuning into us each and every time. Thank you once again for tuning into this episode of the show. And we look forward to hearing from you next time around. Have a good night.